This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, continuing with Professor Catherine Conybeare of Bryn Mawr College. Her new book is Augustine the African. These moments in the 380s are the only time he will not be in Africa, which is amazing given that he's presumed to be a Catholic saint attached to Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. Yes, he was, but he spent his life in Africa, not these years. He goes to Milan, and Ambrose is the, as Catherine says, charismatic preacher. All of a sudden, knock, knock on the door, Monica shows up. Why? Why does Mom chase after him, and what does she want to do for him, Catherine?
Monica, beyond wanting to keep a motherly eye on him, wants, as he portrays it, to secure his conversion to Christianity. Monica is utterly dismayed by Augustine's ongoing Manichaeism. He's also become involved with astronomers, and she wants to nudge him to embrace the Christian church. She is also professionally ambitious for him, and she wants to make a good marriage for him. She comes under the spell of dominant Bishop Ambrose, who tells Augustine he's lucky to have a mother like her.
And she wants him to marry properly. And what does she do about it? And this is, Catherine, this is the cruelest part of his life. Please explain.
It's terrible. Monica sends away the young woman with whom Augustine has been living for 14 years and with whom he has a son, Adeodatus. She sends her back to North Africa because this young woman is in the way of an advantageous marriage. Augustine and the young woman never married. We assume class differences made that unlikely. And so this woman travels back alone without her son to North Africa, to Thagaste, to their hometown. It is a shatteringly cruel moment in Augustine's life.
And we don't know her name. And that's on purpose. Augustine didn't tell us her name in his confessions. It's bizarre.
I think it is on purpose, and I don't think it's bizarre. I think it's to protect her. When he wrote the confessions some 10 years later, she would still have been alive. The friends among whom that work will have circulated will have known who she was. And I think it gives her a little vestigial privacy. It honors her memory.
Mother, however, has ambitions. She has a young bride, I believe, the daughter of a well-to-do family, who may or may not have been a virgin. I don't know all of the practices, but Augustine now is clearly under Mother's wing to be ambitious. And she has a budding relationship with Ambrose, and Ambrose sees Augustine as gifted or Monica as gifted. Which is it?
Ambrose sees Monica as an exceptional Christian presence. There's very little evidence that Ambrose gave Augustine much attention. Augustine deeply admired Ambrose, but it was not a reciprocal relationship.
You have a scene of Ambrose sitting in his church, I suppose, that's where he was, reading, and people would come to him for favors to talk to him, and he would continue reading. He was a Roman royalty, or whatever, aristocracy. Monica was not. They were in the in-between zone between being Roman in North Africa, which is important, but Roman in Milan from North Africa, you're reminded all the time, you're a country bumpkin. And that burned Augustine, right? At this moment, it still bothered him that he'd been recognized with a North African accent.
Yes, definitely. In his time in Milan, he recounts the story of being sneered at by his students in Rome for his African accent. It was probably the first time he'd realized he had an African accent. And in Milan itself, he stays with a very close circle of North African friends and family. He doesn't recount himself meeting that many people outside that circle, people actually from the Italian peninsula, with the exception of Ambrose and a great mentor of Ambrose, Simplicianus.
The marriage doesn't happen. He makes a decision to go back to Africa with his mother. Why?
This is one of the turning points in Augustine's life. He has been casting around for direction, for commitment. His mother has been urging him towards Christianity, and he has decided that he cannot truly be a Christian without giving up on any sort of sexual relationship, on marriage. He recounts a magnificent scene in a garden in Milan, in which he hears a child's voice saying, "Pick up, read." And he picks up the book of Paul's letters, of the epistles of St. Paul, that he has brought with him into the garden. And that's his moment of conversion. He reads a passage that encourages him to give up the indulgences of the world and to put on Christ.
And his interpretation of putting on Christ means that he goes back to Africa?
It means he dismisses his fiancée, mm-hmm. and he steps down from his job. He has been teaching rhetoric in Milan, and he has been working at the imperial court as an official orator. And stepping aside from that, he no longer has an income. And he has this North African posse of friends and family, not just living with him, but dependent on him. So he is obliged to go back to North Africa, because that is where he has family lands on which he can settle with this same little posse, and above all with his beloved son. And he can live in gentlemanly but Christian retreat.
And now a shock. At Ostia, which is the port of Rome that you sail to, from which you sail, Monica dies suddenly. Is she buried there?
She is, to the astonishment of Augustine and his brother, both of whom are at her deathbed and who have heard her say many times that she would want to be buried in North Africa, back in their hometown with their father. But in the moment when they urge her to go back to North Africa, she says, "Bury me here. Nothing is far from God." It doesn't matter to her where she might be.
He leaves his mother's remains. He sails for Italy, although it takes him some time. There's a general hesitation to sail anywhere because there's a war going on around him, which is wonderful foreshadowing. If this was a science fiction book, I would understand. There's going to be the state crowding in here. Right now, it's all about Christianity and Augustine's transformation. He's giving up a terrific career in Milan. He would have been a prosperous man, no matter his accent. But he's being trailed by others who follow him as if they're his acolytes, and they're sailing back to Carthage and back to Tagaste, where Dad owned some land, so they're going to live comfortably in Tagaste. But a man named, is it Valerius? What is the name of the bishop that they take up, that he takes up with in Hippo?
Valerius, indeed.
Valerius is older, I take it, and he needed a protege. How does he find Augustine?
Valerius is older, and he grew up speaking Greek, and he wants someone who is more fluent in Latin to preach in his church. He finds Augustine because Augustine comes to his church at another turning point in his life, a bigger one, bigger than the scene in the garden at Milan. because his vision of the future built around this gentlemanly withdrawal on the estates in Thagaste has been shattered by the death of his son, of truly unexpected death, and casting around in grief and disorientation after his son's death, Augustine comes to Hippo, is seized by the congregation, and forcibly ordained. Extraordinary story, but it happened a lot in those days because there were more congregations than there were articulate men to lead them.
A note about a Deodatus. From your reporting, he was a gifted child in many languages and everything a father could want. We don't know why he died, correct? People just died in those days overnight.
Correct. He died in his teens. He was about 16 years old. And we wouldn't even know that he had died were it not for a couple of asides in the confessions saying that God took him away after his return to Africa.
It's important now that we mention that we're at Hippo. It's not Thagaste anymore. You've been to Hippo. What remains today?
Hippo is the most wonderful archaeological site. And of course, deserted because there is no tourism to speak of in Algeria. It's very extensive. Roman streets. The remains of the buildings are low, knee-high perhaps. So as you stand on a mound above it, it's like looking at a map of a Roman town. You can see churches, villas, baths, all just a few blocks of stone high. It's incredibly beautiful, and it rests on the plain between the mountains and the sea on that north coast of Africa.
So it's a move up from Thagaste, but it's not Carthage. It's outside of Carthage's reach. And
it has
a different name today. The French were there once upon a time. Are there French institutions still in Hippo?
The French were there, and they called it Bone. And there is still a church built by the French on a hillside above this remarkable Roman site, a rather orientalizing church. And the few Christians still left in that area go up the hill past a checkpoint to the church to worship. And it's cared for by three monks from the southern part of Africa, sub-Saharan Africa.
It's now the 390s. And we need to turn to, this is not going to be a peaceful retreat for Augustine, having lost his mother, his son, and his beloved. No, nothing peaceful at all, because there's a schism going on, and it will dominate the next 20 years, now, next several hundred years, called Donatism. The book is Augustine the African. Catherine Conybeare is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.